Tell me who you're excited to vote for.
Any living, breathing Republican.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Focus Group podcast, where we are bringing you behind the two-way glass and discussing what voters are really thinking. I'm Sarah Longwall, publisher of The Bulwark, and today I have with me one of my favorite people in the entire world, Bill Kristol, a man with whom I have worked for years. I have finally made him watch his first ever focus group. Bill, how are you doing? It's great to have you here.
It's great to be with you, Sarah. I'm doing okay. I'm recovering from actually watching the whole focus group. And, you know, there was a reason for the, 4 years we've worked together. You've done the focus groups and commented on them and we've discussed them, but I've never actually watched you do one live or sat through one, but I'm sure it's good for me. You know, suffering is good for the soul, right?
Real America is important, Bill. It's important to connect with real America.
It is. And that's why I'm pleased that you're doing it, Sarah.
Now, I want to start off this week first by thanking all of you who listened to the podcast last week, especially those of you who went and rated it on Apple iTunes. It really helps people discover the podcast. So appreciate anyone who did that and hope the rest of you, if you enjoy this podcast, please go and rate it. If you don't like it, you can just don't tell me. So last week with Amy Walter, we talked to swing voters, 2016 Trump voters who were so repelled by him that in 2020, they voted for Joe Biden. This week, we're going to go one step over to a group that I would describe as conflicted voters. Many of them didn't like Donald Trump, but they voted for him anyway. Some of them decided to vote third party. And there's really just one person in there who was happy to vote for Donald Trump. And so before we jump in, let's just listen to a few of the people in this group talk about why, despite not liking Donald Trump, they voted for him anyway.
This is going to sound horrible, but money. It just boiled down to money and how I thought the country would end up being bettered economically. I thought about the bottom line. I felt dirty walking out of that polling booth having voted for who I voted for.
I have a PhD in epidemiology. And when this pandemic came up and the person in the highest office of the land was treating it very lightly, I just think we have thousands of people dead that wouldn't be dead otherwise. The scientists weren't being listened to. It became very politicized, but I'm a person of faith. There were things he did related to abortion, to the Supreme Court. Those things I really appreciated. And that was why I voted for him rather than Biden, but I didn't like either one of them.
I heard this over and over and over again when I was talking to sort of reluctant Trump voters back in 2018-19 about why they ultimately voted for Trump. But these were people that I really thought could be persuaded in 2020. And clearly, I think it's important to state that a lot of them were persuaded. I mean, Joe Biden won because enough of these types of voters ultimately went ahead and voted for Joe Biden, and even down ticket voted for Republicans still, but did vote for Biden. But these are people who, whether it was abortion or whether it was the economy, which I would say are probably the two biggest reasons you hear from these reluctant Trump voters of why they went for Trump again, you know, they don't feel good about doing it. They do think that he's gross, but ultimately it comes down to sort of either a single issue. But did that strike you?
I am struck by the degree to which their objections to Trump, though, were real. But for people like me, you know, the degree of the violation of the rule of law, the contempt for truth, the just degradation of the democratic process, the threat to the democratic process, very little of that, my sense is, at least from this one focus group. But it was, and you did discuss January 6th with them some, but even there, they didn't like it. But there wasn't a real sense of, can you believe what he did with the Defense Department and the Justice Department? The kind of things that people like me who've been in government are just kind of appalled by, which overrode really everything else. And I did think that overrode everything else for some of the people who deserted Trump or who couldn't go to Trump in 2016 in the first place, who had been Republicans. But I don't think that really penetrated. I don't know, you tell me, you've done so many of these groups, but it doesn't seem to have really penetrated out there. They have a distaste for Trump, a lot of the swingish, maybe more upper middle class people who reluctantly voted for Trump, but they don't really think of him as a threat the way you and I did.
No. And in fact, I think that we can hear some clips from how some of these voters talked about the insurrection. But certainly when you talk to the groups that very happily voted for Trump, they would dispute the idea that it was an insurrection at all. So the way that I had framed this question to this group was, you know, did you regret your vote after January 6th?
Oh, I absolutely did. I absolutely did. After January 6th and just watching him speak beforehand leading up to it was just, earlier I made the comment that I felt dirty walking out of casting my vote. And I realized, what have you done? Because I was on the fence. I could have just as easily gone with Joe Jorgensen and been happy with myself in the morning.
Certainly unfortunate, and he didn't help the situation by what he said. They were a very small group of people and a very radical group of people that don't represent the vast majority of voters and the vast majority of Trump supporters. So they were a wacky bunch, and there's certainly enough wacky bunches on the other side too, but you have to select the candidate that best meets most of your goals or views. And I've never voted for someone that agreed with everything or that was someone I'd want to have a beer with, but you vote for the best candidate that's out there and practical in a pragmatic way.
And this, I would say, is maybe one of the most tempered responses that I hear on the insurrection, but the extent to which you and I would look at something like what happened on January 6th, the way that Trump, we see it as a very clear-cut case of inciting a crowd and an effort to overturn an election. What, you know, people who voted for Trump see is people who got a little carried away and they're not really representative of Trump voters. And so when I think people wonder, right, how is it possible that after January 6th, he can maintain this type of support? I think that type of comment is pretty representative of a lot of Trump voters, even mainstream Trump voters.
Yeah, I mean, I think the rationalizing word is the key word. And thinking about it a bit, I guess one question would be, if leading Republicans, leading conservatives, places like the Wall Street Journal editorial page, not, you know, Newsmax, whatever, had said this is utterly disqualifying for Trump and for other people who went along with this. And if there were many Republican politicians who were saying I'm conservative and I'm, you know, opposing Biden on this and that, but I'm more like Liz Cheney and finding this just utterly unacceptable, maybe some of those swing rationalizers we saw in the focus group would be more willing to draw a red line there. But they're not, because I think the leadership of the Republican Party, the conservative movement around the country, isn't drawing a line. So obviously there are the conspiracy theorists and there are too many of them, and the people who are toying with violence and there are too many of them. They are way out there. But then the fact that they somehow are not taken too seriously, or their association with the broader cause isn't viewed as disqualifying. And even politicians who toy with them aren't really disqualified, or certainly you're not disqualified if you're a politician who hangs out with other politicians who toys with them. So for me, it's always been so, you know, so clear that you can't tolerate a Marjorie Taylor Greene. And really, you can't tolerate politicians who tolerate a Marjorie Taylor Greene, because you're on such a slippery slope at that point. That is not the attitude of most Republican politicians, obviously. And it's not the attitude of these voters, whether they would sound differently if they were getting different cues over the last few months and the last few years. That really is an interesting question. You know, that's hard to tell, but that's not what happened. You know, after all that, it's hard to blame these voters for having that kind of attitude as well.
Well, this is where I have developed my theory that I like to call the Republican Triangle of Doom, which I would describe as the toxic relationship between right-wing media, the voters, and the politicians. Because I think that, you know, if you remember, the Wall Street Journal did call for Trump's impeachment right after the insurrection. But the problem was Newsmax and OANN and a lot of the other groups that really deal with the base didn't. And there was this initial sort of wave of Trump's real base pushing back. And over time, that kind of seeped into Fox News, which then kind of chilled the Wall Street Journal. And then that made the politicians say, you know what, this actually isn't as destructive. Because remember, even McCarthy condemned it sort of out of the gate, like people like Chip Roy did too. But then they quickly were kind of walking it back when it became clear that the sort of semi-normal reaction that they were having to it was not what was happening within the majority of sort of Trump enthusiasts, when they saw that that wasn't going to be the mainstream dominant Republican position, that's when Kevin McCarthy makes his trip to Mar-a-Lago to try to repair it.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. And I mean, another way of thinking about it is political scientists talk about, you know, hyperpartisanship, which exists today, and affective polarization, which I think is a good way of capturing the polarization, which is mostly based on dislike of the other side. That's the affective part, and how strong that is. And this is what I came up with when watching the focus group. The proof of its strength is not so much in the, I'm making up the number, 20%, let's just say, of the country that is just loathes and hates and is repulsed by every liberal they've ever seen and thinks they're destroying the country and their traitors, or the, you know, 15 or 20% of the left that might have similar views about conservatives. The strength of effective polarization is seen in the fact that it pulls even these people in this focus group. It pulls the sort of more the rationalizers to the extreme. They can't conceive, that's very striking in this group, they really can't conceive of voting for Joe Biden.
I think that's right. And I think there's nothing stronger. There's nothing I hear more often, but the Democrats are worse. You know, they're so convinced that the Democrats are dangerous, that there is a socialist agenda, that, you know, that they have no choice. They have to vote for somebody like Donald Trump. But actually, let's listen to some of the comments about Joe Biden, because they're interesting.
There's a whole laundry list, but certainly the border, illegal crossings at a 20-year high, unprecedented illegal crossings, illegal immigration, and now some indication that perhaps there's a tie between the spread of COVID and the illegal immigrants that are testing at a higher rate of having COVID or not being tested at all in some cases. So that's a big issue, is the border. I would say, obviously, he ran as somewhat of a moderate, but clearly he's not a moderate. His entire cabinet is leftist, and the spending follows that. So he's about as far, his administration is as far left as any administration in history.
But I just feel like the unfortunate situation we're in with COVID and the pandemic has been manipulated and used to spend at just this obscene amount of money, a rate that I fear for my children and their children, how they're going to pay this back. And it's all under this guise of protecting the country from the pandemic. And I think it's literally just a way of getting what they want packaged in with a pretty little bow, that it's COVID relief. And I also, the fact that he signed so many executive orders in his first, I think I read somewhere that it was like 45 executive orders in his first month of office or something insane like that. And I just think it's dangerous. And especially with the cognitive issues, again, I'm sure he's a nice guy, but not the person that we need to lead our country right now.
I've got two adult sons living at home. One cannot stand to be idle. So he lost a job, but immediately went out and got another job. The other one is going to college and had a part-time job at Starbucks. And he got laid off from Starbucks and was in his room gaming. And I'm like, come on, he's got to get another job. My husband's like, he's making more than my other son that's working. Well, who's paying for that? the spending.
My mom worked in assisted living for over 15 years, and she is convinced, and I have to say, I believe her. I believe he's a mouthpiece. He's in the early, she says she shows every sign of being in the early stages of dementia. I think he's being run behind the scenes by people who want to use his executive power to make the changes that they want. And I think he's a good, caring man. But I also just don't think he knows what the heck he's doing.
I didn't like his vice presidential choice. I just felt like she was very, very far to the left, or at least way far left of where my views are, because I'm more conservative in my values. And it was just like too far for me, too extreme.
So I got to tell you, this is something that comes up all the time in the groups, is the idea of Biden having dementia. Not that he's a little slow, not that he's old, but that clinically he has dementia. And as a result of that, he is a puppet for the far left. But in there, to our earlier point, is the idea that Joe Biden and the Democrats are very extreme, and that they are so far left, and that that is the reason that these voters, despite whatever reservations they might have about Trump, they just couldn't vote for Joe Biden.
But I got to say, watching all this, it made me worried about the Biden administration's political success. I mean, it's all downside and no upside. In a way, if you can pick any of the worst things you don't like about the Biden administration, the Democratic Party, make those, put those front and center in your mind, AOC and Ilhan Omar, and then you can tell yourself about the Republican Party that, you know, they're much more reasonable. So the conventional wisdom has been to some degree, well, without Trump on the ballot, maybe Republicans get dispirited and Democrats turn out again because they see how important it is. But I really, watching this, made me think maybe this weak Biden supporters get dispirited. Republicans are all totally polarized anyway and are going to vote and will be thrilled to be able to flip the House or the Senate Republican to check this dreaded Biden administration. You can see how Biden gets in a situation where he can, a lot of things he does or a lot of things that happen that he doesn't do, getting blamed on him. Will he get credit if the economy is growing 6% a year? If COVID really does get under control, is he going to get any credit from this kind of voter at all? So I don't know. If I were in the Biden White House watching this or watching you and me here, listening to us, and I suspect some of them are, but the notion that having a higher child tax credit or that voters will see some construction beginning to happen on a bridge in their area that, you know, whose upkeep is long overdue, that that's going to change their vote to a Democratic Congress or Senate candidate, I'm not so sure about that.
The theory of the case that the Biden administration has is, okay, we're going to spend a ton of money and we are going to materially improve people's lives with all these programs, with COVID relief. And I think that they thought they were going to get a lot of credit for that. And I never hear them get credit for it. In fact, the woman who says, you know, my son sits in his room and plays video games all the time because of these, you know, stupid unemployment benefits, you know, he won't go get a job. It's not, hey, the government's taking care of my kid during the pandemic. It is, my kid is disincentivized. And then you hear it when people sort of in there talking about the economy, they talk about how much spending there is and how alarming that is for them. And so I'm just not convinced at all that the idea that if you sort of spend a lot of money on social programs, that it ultimately makes people feel more warmly about you, because I've just seen zero evidence of that. I will say one of the things that was interesting about this group and different from a sort of pure Trumpist group is how they felt about the vaccines. Because if you do a group that is all Trump voters and you ask if people are vaccinated, the majority typically aren't, or it's about half and half. And though even the ones who are kind of will tell you, well, I got vaccinated because I wanted to go on a cruise, or I got vaccinated because my work made me, or they're almost justifying why they got vaccinated. And in this group, there was an incredibly interesting exchange from one of the respondents about the vaccines. Let's listen to that.
I mean, they have so many of the vaccines available, and I've read reports on a lot of the vaccination rates across the country. 28% of African Americans are currently vaccinated, which I think is ridiculous. Now, here we are that Trump rushed out and promised this vaccine for everybody, and he got it done. And then nobody wants to take it now. If you are Joe Biden's supporter and you voted for him, why are you all of a sudden going against him in the COVID? What he's saying about COVID? He wants everybody to take the vaccine, but yet none of the people that voted for him are taking it. So what does that tell you? Are they waiting to be incentivized to get the vaccine? Your life is not enough of incentive to get it.
What would you like him to do?
I would like him to step up and take responsibility and create a policy for getting people vaccinated.
Bunch of things I've seen have done breakdowns between Trump voters and Biden voters. And it's like, you know, 80 some percent of Biden voters have been vaccinated, but only 50 some percent of Trump voters have been vaccinated.
I doubt it's 80%. I don't believe that number.
That's not what I read. I read in the Washington Post that 61% of those that won't get vaccinated don't support Trump. And minorities are the lowest percentage. Minorities vote 80% Democrat, yet they're only 30% vaccinated.
Right. That's what I saw.
That's not true. Vice President Kamala Harris and President Biden that both said they wouldn't get vaccinated prior to being elected. They both said, would you recommend getting vaccinated? And they said, no.
I don't believe the Democrats are taking the COVID very seriously. Just look at Barack Obama and the big party he had at Martha's Vineyard. And now all of a sudden there's a huge spike in COVID at Martha's Vineyard. I don't think that's a coincidence. I don't think they practice what they preach.
What's amazing to me about that clip, and it's, I got to tell you, one of the reasons I'm addicted to focus groups is because they are clearly telling us that they are hearing their perspective on COVID is that it is Democrats who do not take it seriously enough. And I got to tell you, Robert, they're very much in favor of mandating vaccines, is our big libertarian. His reason for not voting for Trump was because he was still running up the debt too much. He was still spending too much and he needed less government out of him. And this is the thing I try to explain to people all the time. If you are expecting a linear sort of way of thinking about politics from just voters in general, this is not a right or left thing, but voters in general, there's not a lot of linear thinking, and that you can have the most libertarian guy in the group also being the one who is believes that the Democrats are not doing enough to mandate the vaccine so that we can get this thing done with.
I mean, that was such a smorgasbord of misinformation and fake news and rationalizations of reasons to dislike Biden is what it comes down to. So what it tells me is, I mean, they can't avoid the fact that COVID's kind of a big issue. They can't quite avoid the fact that Trump mishandled it. But now the rational, this is what effective polarization means. Well, Biden's totally mishandling it too. And he's either too tough or he's too weak, or Democrats aren't getting vaccinated, which is not true. Or minorities aren't getting vaccinated, which was true at the beginning, but isn't true actually today. And in any case, is sort of irrelevant to the argument here, since these people presumably defend the freedom not to get vaccinated, but fits in with their broader worldview. So I just think it shows how difficult it is for Biden to get credit for any policy, how easy it is to latch on when you're dealing with a complicated issue onto anything you dislike. And people are willing, as you say, to have contradictory criticisms too of Biden. He's too soft, he's too strong, it's just too much, there's too little. But I don't know. I mean, a lot of Democrats have been saying recently, you know, we can really take the issue of vaccinations to the Republicans, against Republican governors who've clearly mishandled it. We have a lot of real-time data. California and Florida were at the same level of hospitalizations and deaths, you know, 4 or 5 months ago. They've gone in two different paths, and now it's very clear which state is better off. So that's a pretty good little real-time case study. But I kind of worry that maybe if you really brought that home, you could get people to face up to the implications of one set of policies rather than another. But nothing I heard in those clips, or more broadly, very little that I've heard in this focus group makes me think there's sort of obvious policy solutions to the political problem of massive disinformation, effective polarization, people having talked themselves over time, over months, over years, maybe decades, I don't know, into an utter and total distrust of one of our two major parties and of all the institutions that they think of as going along with those parties, the schools, the universities, mass media, except for Fox, elites on both coasts and so forth. These are not working class voters from deserted steel towns in the Midwest. These are, I would guess, almost all college educated, I think.
So you mentioned the sort of fake news and misinformation. I mean, you heard in a number of those clips, both things that you're like, oh, okay, this is a narrative on the right that clearly people hear, like immigrants are bringing COVID. This group is a different version than a pure Trumpist group. As a pure Trumpist group, everybody will tell you the election was stolen. In this group, people were a little more circumspect about that. But I want to play you the clip because there were still people in the group who were very sure that it was rigged. But let's hear how they talk about it.
I was going to vote Trump, and then I did more research in that. And I felt my vote wasn't really going to matter. You know, I'm here in Georgia where I feel that they rigged the elections. I personally witnessed tampering. So I felt that my vote wouldn't count anyway. So I voted for a third party. They were emptying the mail-in ballot boxes 2 days after the results were due in.
I felt that. Because I'd be so curious to know how this election turned out if this wasn't a pandemic year, because I feel like the fact that so many votes were now mail-in votes unprecedented numbers of that. I just feel like that's something that's ripe for potential fraud. I think the fact that all of these votes started appearing in the middle of the night, I just found the whole thing to be very shady. I remember hearing a story about in Arizona, which was a very important state, that in the most, and is typically a Republican state, that in the highest populated, strongest Republican counties, that voters were being given Sharpies to mark their ballots. And being told that don't use pens, you have to use these Sharpies. And then the machines like couldn't even read the Sharpies.
The old Sharpie conversation in Arizona. I got to tell you, the number of people who in the focus group say that they personally witnessed voter fraud is amazing. And then the other one, and they sort of say it here, but it is, people are like, it had to be rigged because when I went to bed at night, Trump was ahead. And when I woke up, Biden was winning. And there were these ballot dumps in the middle of the night. And they always describe them as ballot dumps as opposed to counting votes that were coming in. But like, this is what is interesting to me is this is a MAGA adjacent group. This is not a full MAGA group. And yet, when I asked the group how many people thought it was rigged in some way, five people thought that. And they didn't all think that it necessarily meant Trump definitely won. They just thought that it was shady and that there was all kinds of, you know, terrible things that had gone on.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that you were able to listen to that and be polite and pleasant shows what a better person you are than I am. Because when Robert was saying that, well, I personally witnessed tampering, I would have interrupted and said, nonsense. That's just not true. What did you witness exactly? What if you witnessed tampering? Did you report it? And Georgia is the most recounted state ever. And it turned out to have had an extremely accurate count run by, of course, a Republican governor and a Republican secretary of state. Arizona, they did not give out Sharpies. There was no Sharpie issue. Arizona is probably the second most recounted state ever and also run by a Republican governor and who certified the election. So, I mean, this is where you do see the incredible ability of the misinformation, the disinformation to spread. I think your very important point beyond the core MAGA group to the MAGA adjacent group. And I think a lot of us kind of thought, well, gee, it's so crazy that it's going to backfire on them pushing this. The Arizona audit, the craziness of Trump, the Rudy Giuliani at Four Seasons, you know, what was that? Landscaping
company.
Did any of it backfire? It's not clear to me that any of it did. If no, what happened is, well, that was a little extreme to go there maybe. But, you know, there's a point there about those ballot dumps. That term comes, of course, from Fox and from Trump and from Giuliani and from Powell and all these people. And because they're willing and ready to believe these things, do now repeat them and use them to justify a kind of soft version of MAGA conspiracy theories. But still, it's conspiracy theories, incidentally. How does all this work? You know, I don't know. It raises the whole question of how you deal with this. It's not a matter of, well, here are some facts to go against that. I mean, it could be a matter of that, I guess. But the degree to which we're dealing with a sociological and cultural problem here, you know, for tens of millions of Americans, that makes them very open and susceptible to this. And we're not dealing with a sort of, gee, there's a slight educational failure about how we run elections in the U.S. You know, they want to believe this. They want to believe this.
And one of the things that strikes me, I'm always sort of have my antennas up for the intergroup dynamics, because in this group, you do have this gentleman who feels strongly that the election was rigged. He's the same person who came up with the most conspiratorial ideas. And then you've got kind of on the other end of the spectrum, our epidemiologist, somebody who's clearly got a PhD and, you know, who was found it very difficult to vote for Trump, who was embarrassed and horrified by the insurrection. But as she listens to him talk, you don't, like, I see groups where people are very clearly disagreeing with something that someone else is saying. But the other people in the group, as he sort of says these things, they kind of just, they either nod or they just kind of say, yeah, maybe, I don't know really what happened. And that, I think, goes to this point that I think is so important about the more extreme wings, that what you want to be doing is sort of isolating or driving away the more reasonable wings is actually not what's happening. It's actually just kind of like, you know, and that doesn't mean that I don't think there's still a segment of the Republican Party that can be repelled by extremist elements. I actually very much believe that that exists, but you don't see a lot of that dynamic particularly here.
I mean, it's confirmed by the polling. I mean, people are not as put off as one, I think one would have thought they would be, by all these different things, whether it's for the violence incitement, the conspiracy theorizing, true conspiracy theorizing, not even just mild versions of it, you know, which would require millions, I suppose, to be in on this conspiracy. I don't know, hundreds of thousands of deaths from COVID. You know, it's kind of a major fact that sort of elided over everyone who's sort of was okay with Trump, except for that one person, I think, who really was upset by the way he handled COVID. But now they're all going to be upset by Biden and whatever the inconsistencies of Biden, the CDC's messaging and so forth, and whether he should have been a little earlier to mandate vaccines or to get the testing improved. It's sort of night and day from my point of view from what Trump did for a year. But it's all going to get, you know, mushed together. And by a year from now, it's going to be, if anything, why didn't Biden get us out of this faster? And now we have a little bit of inflation. I mean, maybe because of what we tried to do to keep the economy afloat during this terrible pandemic. And again, the willingness to excuse things on your own side, and then the willingness to just use anything to blame the other side, even if it's kind of inconsistent. He's not getting people vaccinated quickly enough. He's much too harsh on all those people, you know, people exercising their freedom not to get vaccinated.
So another thing that I think is interesting, I asked, are people excited about voting in 2022? Are they fired up about politics? And despite people feeling like there's rigging going on or there's shady business, people were very fired up.
I think two other people from Georgia here, and we are going to have a big election in 2022 with Governor Kemp coming up. And then also the senatorial spot is coming up as well. And we need to make changes to retain Kemp and make sure that senatorial seat changes hands. So it's a very big election.
And I'll say that this is another thing that I would put as a bit of a warning sign, I think, for Democrats, which is that across these groups, I see real enthusiasm from people who voted for Trump to vote in the midterms, because even those who like weren't that enthusiastic about voting for Trump in 2020, they're very enthusiastic now about putting a check on Joe Biden.
Now, just what you say. Now, these are one type of voter who are probably the kind of voters who they stuck with Republicans down ballot anyway, and they're going to be particularly eager, as you say, to have Republicans check Biden. There's another type of Trump voter who might fall off and not vote in 2022, which would be the white working class voter, the rural voter who doesn't normally vote and loves Trump, but couldn't care less about some establishment Republican somewhere. But if the Republicans can bridge the kind of establishment appeal to some of these people and the appeal to the Trumpy voters, they could be in decent shape in a lot of states. Now, there are a ton of Biden voters, we shouldn't forget, and there were more of them. But the notion that just the worse that Trump behaves, the worse Marjorie Taylor Greene behaves, that it's going to sort of damage Republican prospects in 2022. Yeah, I'm pretty uncertain about that. The other thing I would say is the degree to which these people, I don't think they would approve of maybe Josh Mandel shouldn't call those he dislikes traitors, but they wouldn't penalize necessarily. They wouldn't not vote for Josh Mandel because he's used that term. They might prefer in a primary someone a little more muted, but if it came to a general election, they'll stick with Mandel, don't you think, against a normal Democratic opponent. So what price will the Republicans pay for playing with fire, for letting their extreme elements pour gasoline on the ground and throw matches around, and the mainstream Republicans walk around occasionally tut-tutting, but not doing anything to take away the matches or remove the gasoline? I think it's a very dangerous situation.
Yeah, the word I was looking for before, and that I think the point you just made is exactly right, is that people are now desensitized, right? So it used to be that politicians would feel like if they used language like that, there was a certain part of independent swing voters that they would alienate. And I think that something that we thought back in 2016, early days, where we still thought there was a lot of sort of mainstream kind of normie Republicans who were horrified by these things, but they just couldn't vote for Hillary Clinton, that we thought that ultimately they would reject Trump. Like maybe they would vote if somebody primaried Trump, they would vote for them, like a Larry Hogan or something like that. But as Trump's tenure went on, people are so desensitized that now you see all these mini Trumps running that previously everybody would have been like, well, you can't have Herschel Walker or Josh Mandel or these crazy people because sort of center right moderate voters won't vote for them. But with the negative polarity, And people being unwilling to vote for Democrats, fewer people being willing to swing their votes. I mean, still a critical piece of it can and will swing, but far fewer. You do have just that desensitization to sort of the crazy now, just a higher threshold for it. And I think that is something that Trump really changed on the right.
Yeah, I totally agree. Now, whether it changed enough to give Republicans majorities in either House of Congress or presidentially, which is a question, maybe it just means we're sort of stuck at where we were in, you know, 2020. A lot of our liberal friends, you get this question all the time too, I know, is when are they going to pay a price for this? Don't they realize how much damage this is doing? You get this a lot if you go on MSNBC occasionally, as I do. And, you know, boy, here's a real Republican lunatic being a lunatic. And boy, are they going to pay a price for that at some point. And I always say they haven't paid a price. They won 12 seats in 2020 in the House. They did lose the House in 2018. So there was a desire to check Trump. But now it's a Democratic president and a Democratic Congress. So all the desire to check goes the other way. And I think it's going to be hard to scare people practically about what's a Republican, you know, House going to do. I mean, Biden's going to veto anything. They're not going to get through the Senate and Biden would veto it. So they can't do that much, really. And people like me can make fancy arguments about you're legitimizing an unbelievably unhealthy kind of politics, conspiratorial, violence prone, totally irresponsible, demagogic. I am struck how little those arguments or perceptions seem to penetrate among at least, maybe they do among some voters, but not among these voters.
Just as we close out on this, and I was talking to the group, I always ask sort of in the latter half about different Republicans. I kind of try to get a sense of who do they like these days and would they like to see Trump run again in 2024? And this group, again, very different from a pure MAGA group in the sense that when I asked if they wanted Trump to run again in 2024, a couple people did, but there wasn't sort of an overwhelming enthusiasm for it, which you actually do see in a lot of the other groups. But what was interesting is when I was asking people, so who do you like on the Republican side? Like, who are you interested in? You got names like Kasich from our epidemiologists, Rubio, Cotton, Haley, Cruz, and whatever we may think of those people, those are sort of mainstream, I would say, Republican choices. When I brought up DeSantis, people were quite fond of him. But I would say in the groups that are sort of pure Trump voting groups, you get a lot more of sort of Candace Owens and Tucker Carlson. And you actually, if you ask about Mike Pence or Nikki Haley or Marco Rubio, you get really aggressive thumbs down. Trump kind of changed the game in terms of what people's threshold is for interesting. Like, they're just not that into Mike Pence anymore. You know, they sort of find him to be a conventional politician. I mean, in a lot of the Trumpier groups, they think he's an outright traitor for not standing by Trump. And I think at least one or two people sort of mentioned that here. But mostly they're just like, eh, he's not that interesting to me. And they want somebody that puts on more of a show.
I just don't know that if he's strong enough or has full-throated opinions on things. I think he's somewhat of a career politician. He's a nice guy. I'd certainly vote for him as a vice president.
I don't think he has the appeal and is outgoing enough to win the presidential race.
It seems like you have your president and you get them for 8 years and then you get the vice president and then you get them for, you know, it's, I just am ready for there to be something new and different. And that was one of the things that was most appealing to me about Trump in 2016, something different, like not the status quo.
Just something that's come clear to me doing these focus groups is Mitt Romney may be in the Republican Party, but it is not Mitt Romney's Republican Party. These voters no longer are interested in those types of Republicans. It's just not where they are.
Yeah, and I'd say just on your previous point, which I think there really isn't a Mitt Romney wing of the Republican Party or probably a Liz Cheney wing. We'll see if there are enough Republicans in Wyoming to renominate her or not. But so there's kind of a MAGA wing and a MAGA adjacent wing, right? Those are the two chunks of the party. They're probably maybe fairly evenly balanced, I'm going to guess, you know, in terms of popular support and in terms of likely presidential candidates. They're different shades of MAGA adjacent, from pretty enthusiastically for Trump, but not quite where Trump is, all the way over to Chris Christie, kind of trying to distinguish themselves. But they all supported Trump. Many of them worked for Trump. It makes a huge difference to the country whether that party ultimately is a 51% or 47% or 42%. or 38% conceivably of the electorate. So those few percentage points do make a huge difference in terms of Biden being able to pick them off or other Democrats doing so. But you did this focus group mid-August, I think. The Democratic Party over the 6 months until this focus group had not been wildly left-wing in congressional primaries, in the New York City mayor's race, and other choices they had to make. They had gone more centrist than radical. In many of Biden's governing choices, he had gone more centrist than radical. He wasn't expanding the size of the Supreme Court. He wasn't succeeding in overturning the Hyde Amendment. Manchin wasn't going to let him. The radical things were coming from Republican governors in Texas and on abortion and in other states and in Arizona audits and all this. So that seemed to have had no effect on them. That is, they didn't look up 6 months later and say, gee, it's the Republican Party that seems to be being radicalized in an irresponsible way. The Democratic Party, I got a lot of problems with them, and I don't think Biden's the greatest and all that. But, you know, they're not crazy, or the crazies aren't running that party. Jim Clyburn is repelling the radical Democrats, and, you know, they're not mandating critical race theory at the federal level and so forth, and not even in many states, honestly, or even many localities. You know, we'll see. Texas will be an interesting thing that came up a little after this focus group, the Texas abortion law, which I feel does have some potential to take swing voters, not very affiliated voters, younger voters, and make the Republican Party look truly kind of nuts and intolerant and extreme. But yeah, this group, I think, is a good indicator of the challenge, not just that Biden has, but that everyone has in trying to deal in this politics where we have such partisanship and such polarization.
I'm tempted to leave it there, but I do want to just bring up one last thing, which is we talked about Afghanistan with the group. Did it cheer you up at all to see how they talked about Afghan refugees?
The people that helped the United States over the last 20 years, from the Afghanis that lived there and were translators and people that worked there helping the Americans, you should have evacuated those people first.
Yeah, so I've been wondering whether that also is an issue where Fox and some of the Trumpier types, Josh Mandel, to come back to him, are out of touch with even their own voters who do have a different attitude towards refugees who worked with American troops or with other Americans and who want to come over to the U.S. as opposed to, you know, random people who were unfortunate victims of civil war or economic problems or other terrible things. But we don't really have a obligation to the way they would see it. And therefore, we can be pretty hard-hearted about not letting them come in. So I think maybe the combination of Afghan refugees, the Texas abortion law, the craziness on COVID now and on vaccines from some conservatives and Republicans, maybe you'd think all that might come together to allow for some peeling away of Republican support, at least for the extreme Republicans. I don't know that we've seen much evidence of that yet, though.
Well, I will tell you what, we're going to do more focus groups. We're going to find out more about what these voters are thinking. We'll check in on that abortion law, maybe with some swing voters. Hey, Bill, thanks for watching a focus group. Thanks for talking about it. And we'll catch you guys next time on the focus group.